Running a call center sales team is definitely filled with challenges, but at the same time, can be very rewarding. There is no manual for how to win the call center sales game, which is why this podcast exists. As your guide, our goal is to help you overcome challenges, discover new tools, innovate where possible, and hear stories from others who have made it to the top of the call center mountain. Welcome to the Scalable Call Center Sales Podcast with your host, Jason Cutter.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to another special guest episode of the Scalable Call Center Sales Podcast. My name again is Jason Cutter from Cutter Consulting Group, and I am excited to have Sean Rhodes from Bulletproof Selling. He has a very fascinating background. Some people think mine is fascinating. I think his is way more interesting. So he was in the military as a Marine. In fact, it's not in his bio, but he has a PhD from that time in his life. He was a war correspondent, international expert, looking at how teams operated in all of these crazy places that he went to as a war correspondent, and then took that and became a TEDx speaker, consultant, author, basically studying what teams did and then applying that to the world of sales and sales operations. So he is definitely a man after my own heart, looking at leadership, operations, and how that ties in. He's author of two books. So the first one is Pivot Point, Turn on a Dime Without Sacrificing Results. Three books, and then Universal Export, A Guide for Overachievers on Working Less and Enjoying More. And then this one, which is the one I love the most, which is Bulletproof Selling, Surviving and Thriving on the Battlefield of Business, which will be the theme and a lot that we're going to talk about today. He's here. So we're going to talk about leadership, operations, and wherever that goes, especially focused on call centers inside telesales teams. Sean, welcome to the Scalable Call Center Sales Podcast.
Thanks, Jason. I had a good time with you on my show, and I know we think a lot the same. So I have no doubt this conversation is going to be insightful for everybody listening. I know I'm going to learn something from you today, too.
Yes. And as you mentioned, so you also host a show called the Bulletproof Selling Podcast, which I had the honor to be on. And for me, anybody who knows me, I just love having conversations. I came to terms with the phrase years ago that I'm just a sales nerd and an operations nerd, where I just love talking about this stuff, bringing people on the show, sharing this. Hopefully it resonates with someone maybe hearing you talk about operations and leadership, especially for sales teams, might make it click for some people, or they stop doing what has always been done, which leads to what everyone always creates, which is usually a lot of turnover and chaos and mess. So
that's the truth.
It is. And I don't want to make this me on my show. I just want to set the stage, which is, here's why Sean is here. Listen to him. Even if you don't listen to me, listen to him. So let's just start. You have a lot of background in the military, war correspondent, like it's all of these things that layer on it. You see the world as a battlefield. Sales itself is a battlefield, right? It's not life or death. It's nowhere even close to the stuff that you've seen, you've dealt with, some of the stuff I've seen in the past. Like, a lot of people in sales think it's life and death, but it's really not. But there's a lot of things to take from that and apply it to help, like, okay, but here's how you survive. Here's how you stay alive. Here's how you survive. What's some of the biggest highlights, right? And then we'll dive into some of the things, but the biggest highlights where you're like, this is what happens on the battlefield. This is literally how it translates one-to-one in a sales team.
I'm happy to discuss that with you, Jason. So the best place to start would probably be the first couple of times we discovered there were actually bulletproof people in the military. These folks weren't bitten by a radioactive spider. They didn't get hit by a meteorite that was loaded with some kind of alien energy. They were actually just average folks from basically every town in America, men and women that were out there on the battlefield doing what they do, but in a very unique way. So I'm going to share something with you for those of you that are catching this on video. And if you're not catching it on video, if you're just listening to the podcast while you're running or you're driving, I'm going to describe what I'm going to show everybody, because it's something that you're probably very familiar with if you've ever seen a war movie or you've ever seen a SWAT team go into a building. This is where those folks kind of stack up outside the door and there's a lead person in and everybody's pointing their rifles in a very specific way and following each other in a specific way. And it almost looks like they're moving as a single unit because nobody's communicating verbally. They've trained enough times to know who's supposed to be where and which rifle's supposed to be pointed in which direction as they navigate stairwells or hallways. Well, I saw this happen again and again, and I realized that these folks were bulletproof in that they knew more than likely where danger was going to come from. That's why they knew where to move their rifles and how to stack up in that certain way and how far apart to be with one another. And then we realized as we began watching them through Fallujah, Ramadi, and battlefields all over the world, that they were bulletproof, not because they had superhuman powers. They were actually bulletproof, Jason, because of all of the times their predecessors hadn't been. And what I mean by that is every single time these missions would come back to base, before these folks were allowed to shower, shave, put bandages on their wounds sometimes even, they had to debrief. They had to talk about what went right, what went wrong, and how do we get better in the future. And when I began studying sales teams, and I've had the opportunity to study more than 15,000 individual sales meetings by this point, we realized that the top performers, the ones that were closing the most sales, they were also doing this. They were taking the time after their sales meetings to think about whether I sold or not. How do I make sure that I repeat what worked? And how do I take a look at what didn't work so well and eliminate it or get better at it? If I can't overcome every objection, how do I overcome just a couple more than I could last week? And if you can begin doing that, well, you can achieve that bulletproof status in the field of sales. Because as you mentioned, yeah, sales is the battlefield of business. And we're not on our with our lives on the line, as you said, but we are fighting for our commissions. We're fighting against the ignorance and apathy of our prospects who probably didn't even expect us to call, especially if we're working in a call center. So we've got to fight against all these things, and we need to do it in a way where everybody can come out a winner. And by taking a look at what works and what doesn't and begin to operationalize things in just the way that you teach them how to do on this podcast, Jason, we can create some more bulletproof salespeople.
Okay, so that all sounds great, Sean. It sounds exactly what we should do. I mean, we are recording this. The Super Bowl just happened. So date this
That's
when
right.
people are listening to a relative. What you see on the field in sports is usually just a small subset of their existence, even within a week. We're not talking about a lifetime. We're not talking about a career. We're just
right.
talking about within the week itself. Football's a great example. Soccer's a great example. It's like they play once a week. They're doing a ton outside of what you see on the field, on the pitch.
Oh,
in
yeah.
The military, because I've been a part of that as well. It's like they do their activity. They debrief. They have the briefing. They have the strategy. They have the practice. But here's the problem, Sean. And this is what we both see in the real world. And I'd love to hear your thoughts, which is in sales, though, time is money. If you're having meetings mm-hmm. about meetings, or if you're spending time debriefing yourself, you're not making more sales. And teams, managers, companies struggle with saying, all right, we just want you to make this many calls a day because we're going to brief and debrief the rest of the time.
Mm-hmm. And so the thing that I would ask, and I ask sales leaders this all the time in the work that I get to do around the country, like you going into teams and helping them achieve greater results, is I say, what is the best outcome from a sales meeting for you? Is it making the sale? Is it gaining a referral? Is it discovering some follow-on business that you could then upsell that person into? And we discovered that over the course of surveying a couple of hundred sales leaders, the best outcome from a sale is none of those things. The best thing you can get out of any phone call, any meeting with a qualified buyer is learning what to do and what not to do next time. Because the challenge in winning a sale without being able to look back and figure out why that happened is you were using hope as your sales strategy. And for the folks that can't see the video right now, I've got a copy of my book, Bulletproof Selling, here. On the inside cover in big gold letters is hope is not a sales strategy. That's how strongly I believe in it. Well, if you're killing it in sales and your pipeline's full and you just don't even have to, you know, prospect anymore, you're just waiting for your phone to ring, maybe, and you're that type of call center. Well, good luck replicating that. If the economy tanks, if another variant of COVID comes out and suddenly the way you have to sell changes, I promise you are not going to be as well positioned as you want to be. But then you take the person that might not have your numbers, but they consistently learn something from every single buyer interaction and conversation. That is the person I want on my team, because that's the person that's dedicated to improvement and getting stuff out of their head and into something like a CRM, like a piece of software, or even as simple as a notebook, Jason, so that they don't have to try to remember the thousands of things that they've learned over the course of a sales career. Instead, they can be more present with their prospects, develop relationships faster, and get the questions answered, because they're not so worried about what are the 18 things I'm supposed to ask in every phone call.
So if we look at it from an operational leader standpoint, right? So somebody's running the sales op, a manager, supervisor, director, VP, whatever that level looks like. And we look at that briefing, debriefing mode and the value. There's so much value in it that both you and I know, and so much value that sales leaders know. It's just, but how do you do that? Or how often do you do that? Or what's the right cadence of that? Because again, going back to the time is money, reason, excuse, it's like we can't do meetings because we've got to make more calls.
Right. And so there's two ways that you can look at this, depending on the type of call center that you're in or the type of sales organization that you're part of. If you are the type of account executive or account rep that is going into scheduled meetings with qualified buyers, maybe you're an account executive level or something like that, then what I would advise you do is definitely brief your sales meetings prior to the meeting. If you're going to spend a half hour or 45 minutes on the phone with someone that has the opportunity and ability to buy from you, why would you not spend 5 minutes just doing a quick research look at their LinkedIn profile, at examining other organizations like theirs that you might have done business with in the past or that your company has on their list of logos on the website, so that you can bring something of value, at least to the point to say, I've dealt with folks in your situation with your job title, my company has, we've solved their problems in this way. Quick little bit of research can provide you enough to be able to say that. And that produces a tremendous amount of relationship building, trust, and value if you're in that kind of role. Now, let's say you're in the call center role where you are smiling and dialing all day. You got 200 calls to make before noon, or they won't let you out to eat lunch. Maybe you're in that type of scenario, all right? Well, you don't know these people are qualified. Your job is to maybe qualify them on the call and bounce them up to an account executive. Well, in that case, your pre-call briefing might just look like a morning sales meeting where your sales leader can say, here's the goal everybody has, reorient you on why you're doing what you're doing, and update you. What's changed in the last week or the last month with our industry, with the services that we provide, with the discounts we can offer, or with the lives and businesses of the prospects that we're reaching out to? Because chances are you're not just picking up the phone book and starting at A, you're calling into an industry or to a certain job title. What's going on in their world? It's your sales leader's job to be able to get their thumb on the pulse of that world and to be able to communicate that to all of their sales reps inside of a call center. Now, the debrief process can look one of two ways depending on the type of model you have. And if it's that first account executive model, well, it's to walk through after a buyer meeting concludes, whether you made the sale or not, just walk through three questions. And it's the same three questions that you should be asking as a call center rep if you develop one of those high profile account executive type of contacts where you know this is going to be valuable for your company. Same three questions to ask in either case. And the first one is, okay, the call's done. It's still fresh in my head. This happens immediately after putting the phone down. If you wait a week or a month, I guarantee you're going to lose most of what you might have remembered otherwise. And you know this to be the truth. First question to ask is, okay, as a salesperson, what should I have known about that prospect going into that meeting that I had to learn on the call? And you could just list it out. Some things might not be available to you online. You found out that, hey, y'all were both raised in the same hometown, but that's nowhere on their social profiles. Okay, maybe there's no way to research that ahead of time, but at least now you know that about the prospect. And maybe that's a question to work into future conversations. Second question to ask is, as a salesperson, what should I have known about me going into that call? What could I have better done or prepared for? Should I have really studied up on my objections? Should I have taken a look at that company's 401k or their stock portfolio or their 10K, you know, whatever, if it's a publicly traded company, what could I have learned about that company going in that's really on me as a salesperson? And the final question, the one that sales leaders hate to hear but need to hear is, all right, the call's over. I made the sale or I didn't, or I bounced it up to an account executive or I qualified them or I didn't. What should my company have provided to me that really would have made the difference on that call? Testimonials, product specs, delivery schedules, color variants, I mean, whatever the things that that prospect asked you about that maybe you didn't have an immediate answer for, that could be a resource your company could begin providing. And if you do that after a call with a qualified buyer, whether you are a call center a newbie and you're making $300 a day, or whether you're that account executive, what you learn from that, Jason, and the next piece of our conversation I know is going to take us there, that actually will create and update that script, that onboarding that you took 6 months ago that you know no one's ever touched since it was created 10 years ago by that fancy consultant. These are the things that allow us to get better as sales organizations and as salespeople.
Yeah. And I think when you break it down like that, and I envision that process, then it's really, you know, it's on the salesperson whenever possible, obviously depending yeah. on the type of team that you have, the level of the people, right? Are they SDRs? Are they just pure cold callers? Or are they actually on the sales role? But even no matter what, like, what can they do to self-assess? And then debriefing everyone's self-assessments, let's say at the end of the day, but it's a much shorter version, right? There's less discovery. It's more right. reviewing and then putting things into action. And then
to your point there, Jason, even something as simple as what are all the objections that everybody heard today, and just popcorn that, right? Mm-hmm. And you might hear a new one once a week doing that, but wow, just being able to hear that one new one and then taking that back to the ivory tower of all the sales leaders and saying, all right, you know, who's overcome this in the past? That alone is a valuable enough process to take 2 or 3 minutes at the end of the day, because it's going to make you some sales. It's going to help drive meetings that you wouldn't have been able to do, because what would happen otherwise, Jason, I know you've seen this, in a room of 50 people, usually in a sales organization, all 50 people have to learn individually how to overcome objections that they hear. And doesn't that take a lot of time? Mm. Or instead, why don't we begin asking people what's going on out there in the field? What are you hearing that's shutting down calls or preventing you from scheduling meetings? Because you might have the answer as a sales leader. You've probably done this enough, but why not pass that information on in a way that everyone has access to, so that you can take the tide and raise everybody's ship in the process?
Well, and then when those organizations think, okay, I've got 50 people, those 50 people need to figure it out on their own and overcome their objections. And I'm sure they'll ask me if they have questions, otherwise they'll work it out. That's assuming that everyone has that same right. skill level or desire. And then what happens yeah. is that usually leads to a lot of carnage.
And carnage is a great word, Jason. So that, you know, that exactly is what would have happened if you'd have taken the type of high performing teams that I was able to study and just picked them off the street in New York City or Boise, Idaho, and dropped them into a combat environment. I mean, it would have been carnage. They don't know where to go, who to be behind or in front of, or how to communicate, or even how to fire their weapons. There's a reason, to your point earlier, that 90% or more of their time is spent in training, and only a small percentage is actually forward facing on the battlefield. Salespeople should be that way as well, but yet most sales leaders think that their time is better spent if they have 100 hours in a week. I want 99 of them on the phone. You won't get the same result. I mean, there's a reason that that great story of, I think it's got to be Abraham Lincoln, I think, where they asked him, if you had 5 hours to cut down a tree, what would you do? And he said, I'd spend 4.5 hours sharpening my axe.
Yes.
It's exactly yeah. what needs to be happening inside of sales organizations as well.
Yeah. And I feel like sales organizations instead is, the Super Bowl is today. Good luck, everyone. Just go out there and learn as you go, right? Just make some calls, make some sales. And we need to win. We need to not lose. And it's the big game. And we didn't practice or talk about this much. And you're taking live calls, right? Like taking live fire in the moment.
Yeah, exactly.
One of the things that you mentioned too, which is, you know, something you and I had thought about in advance, and it's like, okay, how do we cover this? And where is this value, is what you mentioned in that, okay, so you're doing this debrief, you're learning, you're, you know, as a sales leader, hopefully you're trying to figure out how to improve, you're picking up from the team the things that are working, that aren't working. And most operations have some level of a system. What I see a lot of times is it's run by salespeople who got promoted and they're not operational people, and they think, okay, I'm just going to make a playbook because I don't like scripts, so I don't believe in scripts, so I don't think anyone should use a script, but I'm gonna at least throw together this playbook because my boss made me do it. It's the static document that sits there and dies in some shared drive somewhere.
Yeah.
How do you exactly. see bridging that gap, right, between this static one time or static every once in a while to the right balance with being a living document system that's being updated at the right amount, not overly updated, but just like where do you see that fitting in?
So the question of when to update a system is something that I've had the opportunity to ask a lot of sales leaders. And the answer that most of them come back to is when your system isn't producing the results that you want it to. Now, granted, a system does require a little bit of execution and adherence. If you've got a 5-part system and people are only using one step in that 5-part system, well, that's a personnel issue, not necessarily a systems issue. But if you've got your 5 steps and you're fairly certain most of the time of those 5 steps are executed, success is the result, and you're not getting the success, then it's time to take a look back at the system. So I'll give you an example from the battlefield, Jason. When we went into Iraq in 2003, I was with the first troops to cross over from Kuwait into Iraq as part of that initial invasion. And the vehicles we were in hadn't been updated in probably 10 or 20 years. They were cloth-covered Humvees, essentially. So think like a pickup truck, but instead of having even metal sides on the truck bed, it's just cloth stretched over a frame. Well, can you take a guess how effective these things were against bullets? Not very, right?
No.
Stuff would just shred through it. You know, a pebble thrown at the right velocity would just cut through one of these tarps. It was essentially our only protection going into these cities. So they realized very quickly, we're going to need to do something different. So what that looked like for the Marine Corps at the time was, we're going to remove the cloth covers so at least our Marines can see what the heck is going on around them as they go into these cities. And we're going to create a rail right down the center of the vehicle so that instead of facing in, which is kind of useless with weapons especially, now they're facing out, more of an offensive posture, if you will. And that did really, really well until our enemy started using these lovely little thing called IEDs, which is an improvised explosive device. Which, again, we didn't have any armor on these Humvees, so they were really tearing us up. Well, that's when we stopped using Humvees entirely. We began to upgrade into these armored vehicles called MRAPs. And don't ask me what the acronym means, but they're 10 times as heavy and very much a lot of armor on them. Well, that's how we began to update our system for going into cities. So if we look at it from a sales team, how do you up armor what you're doing already? Well, first, again, it's recognizing what we're doing previously isn't working. And then it's taking a look at, and again, you made a great point by saying, should we overdo this? How do we avoid really spending 80% of our time updating systems so we never have any time to sell? I'd take an opportunity at least once a week to just survey your team. And it could be that informal end of day, who heard an objection today that they couldn't overcome, and just get everybody to start popcorning. Maybe that's where you start. But what I find coaching sales teams around this is, if I hear a great idea and I think to myself, if that was not a problem anymore, if I could just solve that for my people, what result would that produce? And if you have five or six issues that you're dealing with, pick the top one that if you got rid of that one thing, man, that would really make a big difference. And that one issue, that challenge that you got from your team is going to do one of two things, Jason. It's either going to create a new system where one might not have existed before. Maybe it's a script. Maybe it's a flow of stages through a pipeline when your people were just jamming everybody in the same category before. Maybe it results in a new set of discovery questions. It might create a new system entirely, or to your point about that operational manual that's dying slowly in a share drive due to lack of sunlight, maybe it's time to pull that thing out and say, all right, people aren't really using this, but maybe the reason they're not using it is they recognize that 90% of it is out of date. And the objection section is ridiculously out of date. There's only one objection that's even addressed in there. And it's kind of a crappy turnaround, to tell you the truth. Maybe that's where we need to start attacking it and then training our people, educating it, making sure they have access to it. And of course, at the tail end of the day, if they were shut down by objections and you know it's an objection that's addressed inside of their training, inside of that standards, that procedures manual, well, now we know we can go back and coach instead of saying, well, I guess you're just going to have to figure it out on your own. So that's how I'd advise people recognize where a system needs to be changed or stood up anew and how to go about doing that in a way that allows you still the bandwidth and the leeway to do what you're there to do, which is provide value, make recommendations, and sell the product or service that you're on the phone to sell.
Yeah. And I think one of the biggest things to help bridge that, because it feels very overwhelming. I know a lot of organizations, I know myself in organizations, not as a consultant, but when I was like, okay, you're now the VP of sales and marketing, fix all of this, right? Like, here's where we want to go. We want to be selling 4,000 times more than we did yesterday. And so go, right? And it's like, where do we even start?
Yeah.
So I think the big thing is, like, especially your up-armored vehicle story is, it wasn't like from cloth to up armored MRAPs, right, which are mostly bulletproof, and it wasn't that one leap. It was, okay, how do we get better? Okay, now the enemy in that case is getting better, so how do we get better? How do we just keep evolving? We're not jumping there, right? Like, I heard a great line a month ago: no one jumps over a mountain, right? Like, they get up and over one step at a time. And so I think it's taking that one bit at a time and just biting into it and just taking that, because you also don't know what you don't know yet, right? You don't know what you're going to need at the next level. And so I love what you're talking about, of just like putting it in place and then changing it and then revisiting it and then just keep going, right?
And every single time, Jason, it will require you to do something new. And that doing something new is a challenge for all salespeople, whether it's that 20-year veteran that pretty much just has it all in their heads, or that brand new salesperson where everything is new. So it's all a big challenge. I love your analogy of the mountain. Another great saying I heard in the field of sales was, nobody falls up a mountain. It requires you to put one foot in front of the other and put forth a little bit of effort to get a new result. In this case, getting you further up the mountain, closer to your commission goals, closer to your sales goals. But it's absolutely critical that you be willing to do something new and that your team members do as well. I remember when I had you on my show, Jason, the chief focus that we had was, how do we take these team members that are a little hesitant to do anything new and either figure out how to get them on board or invite them to find their happiness and career success elsewhere? That was what we talked about. So I'm sure that's something that your call center folks deal with as well.
Yeah, for sure. It's like, how do they embrace change? How stuck are they? How much do they want to do things different? Which is a great segue, because I would love to hear your thoughts and experience on motivation, right? So short setup for this is, there's the carrot, there's the stick. In sales, there's the, you do this and I'll bribe you, right? You close at 3 deals today and I'll pay you this, or you meet your number this quarter, in addition to your regular comp plan, I will bribe you with some other thing, right? Let's just call it what it is. Right. So you're just bribing them to work harder and hoping that's going to work. Then there's the stick, which ultimately leads into termination if the stick is used hard enough and repeatedly enough. What do you see? Obviously, there's the top teams out there that are motivated in some way. We're talking the battlefield teams. But then how does that translate into what's effective for leadership and team building and running a sales team? And where's that balance? I'm not saying no carrot, no stick. Just saying, like, how do you help people stay driven? Because sales is hard, right?
Oh, yeah. Even when you're doing I know it. It's hard. the whole day that I've had here before this interview, I've been selling. I've been building things to sell and selling myself. I'm very much aware of how much of a grind it can be. So let's take a look at the most important aspect, the priority that every sales leader should be encouraging in their team, whether it's a very lockstep industry, in that here's your call script, the exact 5 questions you're allowed to ask, don't deviate from it. Or maybe you've got an industry where people are just considered, you know, to play jazz all day. It's a very crazy industry. Nobody knows what's going to happen or who's going to say what or what questions they're going to ask you. So you better just be ready for everything, like both extremes, right? The number one thing that we found sales leaders are looking for out of their salespeople is the ability and willingness to innovate. And you might think that comes at odds with this military idea where people are largely, you know, marching all together, right? Everybody's got the same pattern, same steps. They're doing the same thing again and again and again. Well, as I found out on the battlefield, these folks are amazing at innovating new solutions on the fly. And so I ask, how are they able to do that when I watched them with my own eyes spend 9 months in training doing the exact same movements over and over and over together as a small unit? And yet on the battlefield, they can take that training, and when the situation around them changes, they can adapt to it and change as well. And so what we discovered is there's actually an innovation quotient, if you will, that really applies into the world of sales. So I'm going to show it to the folks who are watching on video and explain it to the folks that are dialing in or listening on podcast. What you have is a graph here with a line going from the upper left corner just straight down diagonally to the right. And that big section, like half of the graph, the bottom half, is the amount of innovation that's possible. And what we discovered studying people in the military and studying salespeople is that there is an inverse relationship between the amount of attention you have to place on a task, a sales task, the questions you're supposed to ask in discovery, how you overcome objections, the real focus that you've got to put on those areas, and the amount that you can innovate. So this really plays out very, very well when you look at people with seniority in your organization. Chances are that 20 or 30 year sales veteran or that sales leader, well, they can walk into a sales call and dare the prospect to throw new objections at them, because there probably isn't one that they haven't heard. They can hit that hammerhead prospect that's got no time for them on the phone, and they blow right through every single stated or unstated objection, get the information they need, drive the meeting or drive the sale. How are they able to do that? Well, it's because they're not focused on the next step in the process. And this applies to really any field or skill of mastery, Jason, in that if I'm trying to figure out how to ride a bike, well, the first couple of years was rough. Let me tell you, a lot of skinned knees, a lot of, you know, concussions along the way. But eventually I got to the point where now I can drive a car. and listen to music and hold a conversation with four other people in the vehicle and hopefully not get in an accident. Well, learning sales is the same way. So what systems allow us to do, what processes allow us to do, what this type of training allow us to do is get the fundamentals handled in a way where we don't have to think about the next step in the process. And by doing that, we can be more present with the people we're on the phone with, we can build relationships faster, and we can come to the conversation with solutions that we would not have been able to research beforehand. Because when a new piece of information gets thrown at you on the phone, you've got to be Johnny on the spot or Jane on the spot to get an answer to that prospect immediately. You can't say, let me get back to you in 3 weeks. Boy, you just delayed your sales cycle or put it on hold indefinitely. So the ability to innovate, Jason, I'd say is the number one way that we can incentivize people to want to do something different. Because folks, it sounds weird, but even in sales, want to have fun at their jobs. They want to, at the end of the day, think, wow, I counted some challenges and I overcame them. Or I was able to get all the five conversations I was able to drive, all my discovery questions answered. Couldn't make the sale, but at least it's that much closer now. And if you can do that by taking a hard look at the systems you have in place and figuring out how do I leverage them so that I can be more present, well, that's a bulletproof salesperson.
Yeah. And I love that because I was wondering how you were going to tie that back into the motivation. But really what you're talking about is somebody being internally motivated to want to have fun, to want to feel good about what they're doing, which is, again, isn't the carrot or the stick, going for the carrot, avoiding the stick. It's that internal drive to like innovate and like find new ways, which, you know, people doing something that they want to continue to get better at and feel like they're successful are going to, they're going to thrive off of that, right? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And of course, the carrot just gets dropped in their lap as the result of this. I've never met anyone in any job field that was dedicated to their own improvement that didn't eventually find success. It might not have been as fast as the person that had the natural gift for it, might not have been as great as that person that, you know, had the PhD in it before they stepped into that chair. But wow, I know this to be true of you, Jason, because you love what you do and you love learning about what you do. How could you not be successful along the way with that kind of mentality? And so if we can figure out how to allow our salespeople the freedom of movement and the leeway to innovate while basing their performance on what we know works, the best practices that have been proven in our industry, well, that's a winning combination that I promise your competitors are never going to be able to catch up to.
Yeah. And I think when you combine that from a leadership perspective with the other parts you were talking about, with the innovating and updating and growing the processes and the operation, right? The machine of it and involving everybody in that, which is, hey, what are your objections you're facing? Let's start documenting these. Let's build, you know, an objection handling library around what you're seeing, not what me, great oh master sitting on top of the mountain thinks that everyone should do, but like, what are you seeing? And I find myself doing that with my consulting clients and teams, which is, what are you seeing? I know what I know, but what are you guys really dealing with? And then let's really build this around you instead of me just coming in being like, I know everything, because that doesn't work either.
No. And building something around the needs of a team is the quickest way to get buy-in. And so whether you're a consultant going into an organization or you're that sales leader, and this might be your team for the next couple of years, assuming everybody stays on. And of course, assuming you can motivate them to produce results. I want to be on board with that team. I want them to feel like they've got some buy-in to the process. And while they may not have 51% of the vote, that would really fall on me as the leader. I want to make sure that what we're building together is something that they can actually use. Because as you mentioned, there's nothing worse than someone coming in and saying, here's how you're going to do things without ever having tested it, or probably never even having been in your industry, or it's been 10 years since they were in your shoes with that headset on, responsible for that many dials a day. I hate taking advice from people that have been 20 or 30 years out of my industry. I know how that feels, how frustrating it can be. Because it might have worked back when, you know, you were sitting there with your pack of cigarettes and your phone book, you know, but it's just not the way the world works anymore. And we got the internet now. We got this thing called Google, you know, to educate people around that. So I'd much rather, and I do this in the weekly meetings I have with my clients, gathering their teams and saying, all right, bring us your challenges. It may be an issue so big that it's going to take us a while to solve it, but I want to hear what's going on with you. And if you gather five challenges a week from your team, you know, compound that improvement. If you're able to just put small solutions in place, script updates, maybe you can update your CRM to include a field that didn't exist there before that's suddenly going to help your people drive a deal faster. Small changes added up over the course of a year can produce exponentially massive results for your folks. And they'll know along the way that you care enough to ask and you care enough to take action on their problems.
Okay, so here's one that I address a lot. It's one of the things I'll get on my soapbox and just like go off on tangents, but I try to be careful with it on my side. But I want to hear your version of it, especially because you have a fascinating background that's different. So common practice in sales and in other organizations. I know engineering companies that do this as well, which is, hey, you're good at your job. Hey, we need a team lead or a manager. How about you do this? Because if you can do it for yourself and you can close so many sales, I'm sure you can help the team close sales, right? So you're taking someone who's good at the job or maybe mediocre, but you just need a body. And then you just assume that they know what they're going to do. And maybe they do at a certain level, right? Like you can be a team lead of salespeople and you're close enough to it, like you can help them-ish. At some point though, you have to become operational. You have to become company-minded, not sales individual-minded. So what do you see companies doing right when they're helping their leaders make those transitions? Because I'm imagining like a VP of sales or a call center owner listening to this or watching this going, okay, but yeah, like we always do that. And then they struggle, they fail. But like, what am I supposed to do? How do I help them? Or where do I find these people? Because I'm sure you saw that in the military too, which is people move up the ranks. That's why you join. That's what you do in the military. And at some point it's like, okay, you could shoot today. Now I need you to lead, not just shoot.
And so the Peter principle plays into this, which I think is the idea that you will be promoted up to the level of your incompetence, and that's where you'll stop. And we did see that occasionally in the military as well. Obviously, the stakes were a little bit higher, so they tried to avoid it. But I'd say for those organizations that need a body and they think that the best person to do that might be the one that's the most successful in the job. And, you know, they could compensate them all different ways to make sure it's really worth their time. And that's great. But they're going to be pulling someone off of the line and into a leadership position. So what should you be doing with that person? Well, keep in mind that the job of a leader is not necessarily to produce excellence today. The job of a leader in an organization is to ensure the organization is successful tomorrow. And what that means is if they, for some reason, get kicked back down to the line, because that happens to leaders all the time in the military, they'll take that lieutenant and they need him to fill a spot on the wire. Here's a rifle. Here's your ammo. We know you outrank everybody, but if you're not there, someone's going to get through the line and bad things happen. So that happens all the time. You have to be ready to not only go up, but go down in your rank structure. So as a sales leader, if I'm put back down to the line, I've got to get back on the dials and make calls, or I'm just taken out of that position because they find someone externally to come in. Or let's say, hey, you know, I'm doing great and I love it here as a leader. I want to keep going. Well, in both cases, you need that operational playbook. And so the best piece of advice I ever got actually came from a brilliant business writer. His name is Michael Gerber, and you might have heard from him in this book, The E-Myth. Might be one of the books you got behind you for all I know, because it seems like the type of book that you would dig, that you would read. Well, he said that in order to produce success for any size business, you've got to treat it like you're going to franchise 5,000 offices tomorrow. And I'm paraphrasing there, but what that looks like from a leadership perspective, I'm a brand new sales leader, or I'm thinking of bringing someone into that role. What is their chief priority and responsibility? I'd say it's to create a franchise. Operationalize what you know works so well that if I pull you out of that role and put somebody else in it, they'll be able to operate it just as well as you with a minimal amount of training. And again, that's not going to rely on your brilliance and the natural inclination you have to sell. Maybe you were a born salesperson, and you probably have all kinds of thoughts about whether that's a load of BS or not, but some people are really good at sales immediately, and some people, it takes them some time. I think that we can agree on. Well, regardless of who I have in there, whether it's somebody that's never sold a thing for our company before, or I keep you there because you were our top salesperson quarter over quarter for 10 years, how are you setting yourself up for success so that this playbook exists, that it's accurate, that it's updated, that someone else can execute it? And if I want to open up another call center two towns over, that your playbook is going to work equally well for them. So if you bring a sales leader in with that mindset, that their chief job is to prepare your organization for success in the future, I think you'll have a lot better results than just saying, I need your people to sell 4,000% more and I need it done by tomorrow. That should not be the role of your sales leader. That's a sales enablement person, not necessarily the person that sits at the top of that organizational chart.
Yeah. And I obviously, anyone who knows me knows that I agree. Big fan of Michael Gerber and the E-Myth. That really like set the framework for me in business operations. Yeah. And it's about who's the right person in the organization at the right level, where they're building that structure. And then where do they come from and how do they think about things? Because I also see where someone is a natural born salesperson who moves up and then they're leading as a natural born salesperson that still doesn't like systems, scripts, processes. You know, they just think if I hire enough people, they should figure it out on their own, which again goes back to our carnage thought and what we had.
Yeah.
And that's obviously painful. So I know there's a ton more we could talk about. Obviously, you know, we could keep going on and both of us agreeing on all these things that people should put in place. I highly recommend for people listening or watching this because Sean does amazing stuff, looks at it in an amazing way that I just truly appreciate. So there's the Bulletproof Selling podcast, which is out there. He's got his books. He's also really active on LinkedIn. So anyone watching or listening to this, find him on LinkedIn. It's again, it's Sean Rhodes, H-O-R-D-E-S. And you can find him on there. Also, I'm going to put a link in the show notes for all of this, but also he has a survey that if you want to take it, it's on his website. So you can find that on there. Any other cool stuff before we wrap up here, Sean, that you're working on that people should be aware of or that might be coming soon or that you've got out now?
Yeah. So, to your point, Jason, the chief problem with using systems is it gets very overwhelming because you could build a system around any aspect of the sales cycle. That could be thousands of separate systems. And so we stood up that sales assessment. You mentioned that survey we have over at bulletproof-selling.com because we wanted people to be able to tell us, what is the system I need today? And if you just enter that data into that assessment, it'll kick out a sales system that you can begin using to get those types of results. So you don't have to go through the whole learning process that Jason and I have had to go through to learn what it is like to build a sales system, because man, that's heavy lifting. We've tried to do as much of that as we can for you over there at bulletproof-selling.com.
That's awesome. Well, I appreciate it, Sean. Thanks again for coming on the podcast, for sharing all this, for helping reinforce what I said. And like to everyone I said watching this thing in the beginning, if I've said it enough times and it doesn't resonate, maybe Sean saying it resonates. Maybe he's somebody to reach out to. Again, Sean, I appreciate all your time, your energy, and what you're bringing at this, hopefully to, you know, help organizations just thrive and succeed in the future. So thanks for joining us on the show.
Thank you, Jason.
And what I'm excited about is next time, because Sean and I don't live too far away from each other, there's a possibility sometime we might do a recording or a live show with each other. Who knows? We might meet up in between and just
do that would be cool. So,
yeah, that would be fun. So that's it for this episode. Thanks everybody for tuning into the Scalable Call Center Sales Podcast, and we will catch you on the next episode.
Did you get some inspirations of ways to help your call center sales team win bigger, stronger, and faster? Hope you are fired up to scale your sales operations. If you got value from this podcast, please go in and leave a rating and review. Also, make sure to forward this episode to anyone else you know in the call center space. We appreciate your support in growing the Scalable Call Center Sales Podcast family. And if you have any comments, ideas, or feedback, contact us at CutterConsultingGroup.com.